can you tell me a little bit about how the Civil War broke out?
The treaty obviously was signed on the 6th of December 1921, and there was a considerable gap between the signing of the treaty and the outbreak of the Civil War. It's often forgotten that there were, you know, considerable peace efforts in between. The vote on the treaty took place in January 22. The gap between pro and anti treaty in the Dáil was only 7 votes, and the cabinet was split. But the actual split in the IRA wasn't really formalised till later. They were still cooperating. In fact, they were cooperating to assist the nationalists in the north and to assist in the IRA in the north because of the pogroms that were going on by the Irish state and so on. So that was carried on right up, you know, up to April, May, I think. There was arms, in fact, imported and sent to the north to help the nationalists defend themselves and so on. So all of that was carried on. You had then the election of June 22, the general election, and it had been agreed at the Sinn Féin Ardèche in May 22, that there would be an electoral pact that people wouldn't stand on a pro and anti-treaty basis against one another. They would be known for the position they had taken, but they would basically try to maintain the status quo as it was in the Dáil, so that the general election wouldn't result in a widening of the split, and that they would work then on the constitution of the Free State after that. That had been agreed, Collins de Valera Pact, it was known as. It was endorsed by the Sinn Féin Ardèche. But on the eve of the poll, Collins basically sent people to vote for the pro-treaty candidates. By that time, they were coming under severe pressure from the British government, and in fact had come under severe pressure. He had submitted a constitution to London, which they rejected as saying it went beyond the treaty. So it was revised. He and Griffith brought back a revised treaty, constitution, which was not seen by the electorate until the very day of the election. So the general election took place June 22. The constitution was only published in the newspapers that day. So things then declined rapidly. There was an ultimatum from London that the Free State forces should remove the IRA from the Four Courts. The IRA executive, which was senior IRA officers who were anti-treaty, had formed an executive and took over the Four Courts. There was no armed conflict between the forces at the time of the takeover. I think there was very little warning that, you know, they were given an ultimatum to move. They didn't do it, and then the battle commenced. The Free State forces opened up on the Four Courts. The IRA in Dublin was not prepared, obviously, for this. There was no kind of plan for a civil war on either side or any kind of war in that sense. So the thing was fairly haphazard. The Four Courts were obviously occupied, and then when the attack happened, the Dublin Brigade under Oscar Traynor occupied part of O'Connell Street, the east side of O'Connell Street, and some other place in the city. And that was how the fighting began in Dublin, mm-hmm. essentially.
And if you're a young Republican, why oppose the Free State in arms, do you think?
Well, I think the position was, I'd say very few Republicans, very few anti-treaty people set out to oppose the treaty or oppose the Free State in arms at the beginning. I think there was people who did want a settlement, who didn't want to see if the thing could be worked out. But they were adamantly opposed to the treaty because it's difficult to see from the perspective now because partition looms much larger now because we know that it lasted. It didn't seem as if it was going to last at the time, much more important at the time, it seemed, was the fact that, and the treaty said it, Ireland remained within the British Empire. So they fought for a republic, they fought for full independence and sovereignty, and now they were told that they must go into the British Empire or remain within the British Empire. So that was anathema to, you know, being committed to the idea of an Irish Republic. So I think then what propelled the situation into civil war was the attack on the Four Courts, the fact that they had to borrow the guns from the British, so they were seen as working hand in glove with the British government, the fact that the Constitution basically had been, you know, rejected by London and then, you know, revised by London and so on. So they were seen very much as in the camp with the British by the Republican side. Obviously, lots of other people saw it differently, but from the point of view of a young Republican, you saw the Four Courts attacked, you saw the Free State armed by the British, taking up arms against your comrades. So many young people were propelled into it by that, I suppose.
So now you've got two armies, you've got a civil war. What kind of war was it?
Well, I mean, it was a very bitter, brutal war, more so, in one sense, more so than the Tan War, because obviously it was brother fighting brother. It was in many cases, people who had fought side by side in the Black and Tan War. So it was very brutal. I mean, there were atrocities certainly on both sides. There's no doubt about that.
And you've got two armies, let's say the Free State Army and the Anti-Treaty Republican Army. Do you think there's a difference between the two armies?
Well, the IRA seems to have split in the leadership. The kind of top leadership level would have been, I suppose, marginally more pro-treaty. But then there were senior officers in the general headquarters and regionally who were strongly anti-treaty. Rank and file in terms of the people who had fought in the Tan War, I would say probably the majority were anti-treaty. But there were enough key officers and key people around the country to ensure that the Free State Army was able to get up and running. But it was a very close call at the start. And then they brought in a lot of new recruits, people who had no particular political commitment, and who, you know, joined for the pay and the uniform and so on. They were very hard times, so there were always people who would join, you know, an army for that reason, as they would have joined the British Army, whatever kind of like the state army was in the country at the time. And a lot of the Republicans would have contrasted themselves with that, you know, that they weren't mercenaries, they would have called them mercenaries. That's not to say all the Free State people weren't mercenaries. Many of them were people who had been in the Tan War and believed they were doing the right thing. In terms of the actual breakup in terms of the Civil War, there was certainly a class element of it, that the wealthier sections of society, the business class, big farmers, the Catholic hierarchy and so on, and the newspapers, they would have fully backed the Free State. I think there may have been maybe one or two newspapers and regional newspapers that were anti-treaty. That was an indication of the, because obviously they always represented the business class. So that was a kind of the breakdown. So particularly in Dublin, it would have been, the Republicans would have been this predominantly working class people. And if you look at the profile of the young people who were killed, the volunteers, they were essentially working class young people, mostly from the north side of the city.
Mm-hmm. So from the Free State perspective, what they have is an insurgency. And what measures did they use to put this down?
Well, they were very brutal methods. They set up what was called the CID, the Criminal Investigation Department, in Oriel House, which still stands at the top of Western Row there, corner of Western Row and Fenian Street. And that was originally set up by Collins, but it developed into what Republicans called a murder gang, a death squad, if you like, in more modern terms. And they arrested Republicans and took them to the outskirts of the city in a number of cases where they were executed. In fact, when Collins was killed on the 22nd of August 22, his body was brought to Dublin, and while he was actually lying in state in City Hall, three of these killings took place. One of them was a guy called Bernard Daly. He was originally from South Armagh, but he came to Dublin and he was with the IRA in Dublin during the Black and Tan War. And then on the anti-treaty side, he was arrested in the city and taken out to St. Dougal's on the Malahide Road, and he was executed there. On the same day, the two members of Fianna Fáil and the Republican Youth Organisation, Sean Cole and Alf Colley, they were arrested in the city and taken out to Yellow Lane in Whitehall, what's now Yellow Road, Whitehall was Country Lane at the time, and they were executed. And there were quite a number of those in the following months, mostly around the outskirts of the city. And of course it happened in other parts of the country as well, but particularly in Dublin. And the CID based in Oriel House seemed to have been responsible for most of these.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think this was happening?
Well, I think that particularly in the capital, the Free State government felt itself under siege, I suppose, and they were determined to assert their authority. I think they were also afraid that, you know, if the IRA was allowed even to exist in Dublin, that you know, more people would support them, and you know, that this would be a threat to the provision of government of the Free State. So they were very ruthless in suppressing the Republicans. Many of these people that were killed were unarmed. They weren't in combat. Although there were people killed in action as well.
Mm-hmm. And treatment of prisoners?
Well, the treatment of prisoners was bad. There were a phenomenal number of prisoners. I think, I don't have the figure, but it went to many thousands.
12,000 or
something like that, yeah. I'd say it must have been well over 10,000 anyway. So they were just held in all kinds of accommodation, barracks and all kinds of unsuitable places. There was a mass hunger strike in 1923, in which I think two or three Republicans died in that hunger strike. So the prisons were full. And in addition to those, of course, we just spoke about the roadside executions. Of course, in addition to those, there were 77 who were executed in the prisons after court-martial. Many of them were executed in Dublin, of course. I'd say Dublin probably had the single biggest number of executions, mostly in Beggars Bush barracks. The first executions were actually in Kilmainham, and then there were all the subsequent executions, I think nearly all of them were in Beggars Bush barracks.
Would you see this as a war crime, this kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, it would be seen as a war crime in modern terms, yeah. And you know, it's difficult to stand in judgment from this perspective. You know, obviously, as I said, atrocities were committed on both sides. It was a brutal war. It does have to be said, though, that, you know, in all these situations, state forces have the upper hand, as they did in the Civil War, particularly in Dublin. They were very much in the ascendancy here, so it was a case of really stamping out whatever remnants of IRA activity were in the city. So they were quite ruthless. And yes, I mean, you would describe them as war crimes. There were inquests, and in fact you can read about the inquests still. But that was it. There were no prosecutions. There were nobody was ever really held to account. Now, of course, all these executions and killings were hugely important in the sense of the politics of the 20s and 30s, because they were remembered by the Republicans and the Free State were constantly reminded of what had been done. And I suppose that when the wider public, you know, became aware, that was one of the factors that led to the decline in Cumann na Gael support and the rise in Fianna Fáil, because people became aware of what had actually gone on in the Civil War, which they wouldn't have been aware of at the time because of press censorship and so on.
Yeah. But what effect do you think this Civil War and all that happened had on people's perceptions of of the whole time?
It determined, you know, the position on the treaty and so on, determined politics for a long time. But specifically on the Civil War in Dublin, as I said, the rise of Fianna Fáil was part of it, but also the IRA was very strong in Dublin in the late 20s and early 30s. Up until 1936, they organised openly, and commemoration of what happened in the Civil War would have been a big part of their activity, and one of the reasons why they had a lot of support. Also, Republicans beyond Fianna Fáil, they began to analyse what had actually happened in the Civil War, and they did look at it again in terms of the class element of it. Mm-hmm. And particularly Liam Mellows was seen as very important because he, as somebody who had been close to Connolly and who wanted to try to apply Connolly's socialist message, he analysed what was going on at the time and spoke of the fact that, you know, that the wealthy were supporting the Free State and that the Republicans needed to do more to win working class support. So that was kind of increasingly important then in later years for Republicans.
I mean, for example, I'm just thinking, you remember the riots in 2006 on O'Connell Street? Mm-hmm. A messy kind of riot. But I mean, you had people shouting Free State bastards at the Gardaí. So that's kind of a residual memory of it, maybe.
I suppose so. You would, you know, you would have got that over the years, yeah. But I mean, Republican politics evolved, you know, and it's a long history of how Republican politics evolved. And you know, it was 1986 when abstentionism from Leinster House was abolished in Sinn Féin. So people developed a lot more sophisticated kind of approach to politics rather than the simple kind of Civil War politics, if you like. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that term is often used wrongly because people talk about, oh, get away from Civil War politics. Often what they mean is just Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael politics, but in terms of so many issues, including the North, there the differences between them, you know, had diminished to very little, you know, by the 50s anyway, 40s, 50s. So it wasn't really Civil War politics in the sense that, you know, people would have originally invented.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, you're working for Sinn Féin TD now in Leinster House. Mm-hmm. Is the Civil War now over in the minds of Republicans? It's firmly the past.
Oh, I mean, certainly, of course it is. I mean, it was a disaster, a national disaster. It should never have happened. And going back to the origin of it, I think the role of the British government in it should never be underestimated. And clearly the only interest that ultimately that it suited was them, because they were able to establish the Northern State and set the kind of the Unionist Party off on their own course. And meanwhile, in the South, there was civil war, there was economic decline and so on. But the overriding interest that the British government were trying to protect was what they saw as their own strategic interest, that they wouldn't have a sovereign republic on their doorstep. So that was seen to be, that was kind of sorted out for them. But of course, the biggest legacy of the treaty was partition. And obviously that's still the key issue in terms of, for Republicans. The division of the country remains, and you know, we've gone through a long conflict and a peace process, and the issue of the unfinished business of the treaty and the Civil War is the issue of